We're currently amidst the period of Sfiras HaOmer, the 7 weeks that connect Pesach to Shavuos. So this morning I'd like to discuss the messages of each of these chagim, but specifically from the perspectives of the Megillot read on each holiday. So let's begin first with Shir Shirim. Shlomo HaMelech composed 3 Svarim of the 24 books of Tanakh, Shir Shirim, Mishle, and Kohelet. Each of these Svarim, the style in which he wrote them, really reflects the time period of his life in which he composed them. Shir Shirim was written first in his youth. It's a very romantic, very vivid, very youthful type of love poem between a male and female protagonist. Mishle, the book of Proverbs, was written in his adulthood. It reflects wisdom and life experience. And Megillat Kohelet, the Megillah that we read on Shabbos Chol Hamoed Sukkos, was written at the end of his life. And it reflects kind of a bitterness and a frustration after looking back at his life and seeing all of the futility. So what I'd like to start off with today is Shir HaShirim, the Megillah that we read several weeks ago on Shabbos Chol Hamoed Pesach, and get an understanding of the style in which he wrote it. Many have argued that because of the nature of the book, because of this romantic, youthful style, it's not even appropriate to be part of the canon, the 24 books of Tanakh. So I'd like to first look at Shir HaShirim on the literal level. Shir HaShirim is a love poem where there's an alternating dialogue between the Dod, the male protagonist, and the Raya, his female lover. They had once enjoyed a tremendously passionate love, but then they were distanced from each other, and they spent the first several prakim yearning for one another, searching, longing to finally reunite in their passion. So I'd like to pick up in source number 1, in Perek Hay. After a long, hard day of searching for her beloved, the Raya, the woman, retires to her tent. And she says, in Pasuk Bet, and again, they're going to alternate in their dialogue, she says, Ani yeshena, I am sleeping, vili bi er, but my heart is awake. Kol dodi dofek, the voice of my beloved knocks. And now this is the dod speaking, this is the male speaking. Pitchi li achoti, rayati, yonati, timati, shoroshini natal, kvusotiris di selaila. After many, many months of searching for one another, finally, after a long day, she retires to her tent, and it's just at this point that her dod, her beloved, finds her. And he knocks on her door, finally being able to reunite in their passion. So he says to her, through the door, he knocks, the voice of my beloved knocks, and he says to her, Pitchili, open for me. And he speaks in a very passionate, very endearing way. Open for me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfection. Sheroshini natal, kvusoteresi selaila. My head is full of the dew from searching for you all night. My sideburns drip with the moisture. So what would you expect her to do? You'd expect her to jump out of bed, lunge into his arms. But for some inexplicable reason, we see that she's reluctant. We see that she comes up with excuses. Look at her response in Pasuk Gimel. Pishadati et kutunati, echecha el b'shana, rachatsi et reglai, echecha atanfein. She says, I've already gotten undressed. How should I now get dressed again? I've already washed up for bed. How should I now dirty myself? But the dod, her beloved, doesn't give up. And in Pasuk Dalet, Dodi shalach yado min achor, ume'ai hamu'alav. Her beloved puts his finger, like through the opening in the door, through the lock hole, and she describes her insides yearning for him. So finally, after her reluctance, in Pasuk Hei, Kamti ani leftoch ledodi. I get up to open the door for my beloved. Ve'yadai netfumor. Ve'etzvotai mor avar al kapot haman'ul. But she had put lotion on her hands before going to bed, and therefore her hand slipped off from the doorknob. Petachti ani ledodi. When she was finally able to open the door for her beloved, ve'dodi chamak avar. Her beloved had gone. Nafshi yatza b'davro. She describes her soul leaving with his words. Bekashtiyu ve'lo matatihu. I looked for him, but I couldn't find him. Krati velo aneni. I called after him, but he didn't answer. So the love that's described in the Megillah is a very passionate love, but it's an unstable love. Because of her reluctance, she has missed her opportunity, and therefore the whole cycle of searching and yearning begins anew. She continues in Pasuk Chet, Hishpati etchem benot Yerushalayim, im timseu et odi, mati gidulo, shacholat ava ani. She says, as she begins her new, even more passionate search for him once again, she says to the Benot Yerushalayim, she says to the maidens in Yerushalayim, if you see my beloved, tell him, Shecholat Ahava Ani, tell him I'm lovesick for him. So as you can see, just based on this chat level, just based on the literal understanding of these words, the nature of Shir HaShirim is very unique to the Sfarim of Tanakh. The very romantic, the very loving, the very endearing and passionate words are highly unusual for the Tanakh. And therefore, many have said it's inappropriate to be understood on this level. As a result, most midrashim and most parshanim, most biblical exegetes, interpret this text not on the literal level that we just explained, but rather on the allegorical level. Really, the love relationship between the Dod and the Raya, the man and the woman, reflects the love relationship between Hashem, symbolized by the Dod, the male protagonist, and B'nai Yisrael, symbolized by the Raya, the female protagonist. Our school, for instance, if you look at their translations, they don't translate it as we just translated according to the literal understanding. Their translation is exclusively the allegorical interpretation. Rambam, for instance, explains the idea that all of Shir HaShirim is really a mashal for our relationship with God, for the love that we are supposed to feel towards God. Because it's difficult to really understand how we should love something that's incorporeal, a God that we can't see, a God that we can't feel, a God that we can't touch, a God that we can't hear, Rambam says you have to understand how to love God in the only way that we understand love, in the only way that we've experienced love, in human love. He explains that the love that we should feel towards God needs to be an even stronger emotion, an even stronger passion than the love that we feel towards a man or towards a woman. If you look in the second source, Rambam in his Mishneh Torah, in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Yud Halacha Gimel, explains this idea of Ahavat Hashem. V'ketzad hi ahova haruya. What is the appropriate way that we should love God? Hu shi ahovat Hashem, ahava gedola yitera azam od, ad shetehe nafsho kashurab ahavat Hashem. The love that we need to have for God is a very strong, is a very passionate love, so that nafshi kishura ba'avat Hashem, our soul needs to be completely bound up with our love for God. Shogeh batamid ki'ilo chola chali ha'ava she'en da'ato pnuya me'avat ota. Isha v'hu shogeh batamid. It should be that we have to be completely occupied with our love for God. Our thoughts need to be completely preoccupied with Hashem. We have to be lovesick for Him. Just think about how we are preoccupied or passionate about the love of our spouse. We love the man or woman. We love him with all of our heart, with all of our soul. There is no empty thought that is removed from him. All of our thoughts are totally preoccupied with him. And this is what he says we have to project onto God. So just like we feel, a man feels a love for a woman, or a woman feels a love for a man, but who shall get batami, he has to be completely preoccupied with him. Bein b'shivto, bein b'kumo, bein b'sha'a shehu ochel b'shoteh. A man is completely preoccupied with the love of his wife, right? He thinks about her constantly. When he's sleeping, when he's getting up, when he eats, when he drinks, right? Ideally, passionately, right? When somebody is passionately in love, right, at least in the initial stages, we're completely consumed with that love. So he explains, Yoter mizet yavat Hashem. Even more than that should be the love for God. Belev ohavav shogim batami. We have to be completely preoccupied with him. Kamo shetzivinu b'chal levavcha b'chal nafshecha. This is what is precisely commanded of us when we are told we have to love God with all of our heart and with all of our soul. And Rambam explains this is the meaning of Shir HaShirim. V'hu sheShlomo omar derech mashal ki cholat ahavat ani. This is what Shlomo is saying by the way of the mashal when he says, when the Raya says, when the woman says, cholat ahavat ani, I am lovesick for my dod. V'chol Shir HaShirim mashal hu le'inyan zeh. And all of Shir HaShirim is a mashal, is a parable, is a symbol for this idea. So while passion can be extremely positive and can serve as a strong motivator to action, At times, passion burns out. And as we saw in the case of the female protagonist in the Megillah, who was reluctant to open the door for her dod, she doesn't always have that strong passion. And she only regains that passion once he is no longer accessible, once he is no longer there. So passion without commitment is often inconsistent and leaves one, as we saw in the case of the Raya, very unfulfilled. According to the allegorical interpretation, the periods of alternating closeness and distance between the male and female lovers in the Megillah represents the time when Bnei Israel feel very close to God, alternating with the periods during which Bnei Israel reject God and thereby distance themselves from him. Whether on a personal or a national level, Bnei Israel's relationship with God is characterized by a cycle of intense search and desire for him, followed by a rejection of him, which in turn, just like the Raya, leads us to an even more passionate search. So satisfaction and stability are often never quite achieved, but the relationship is perpetually characterized by search, rejection, loss, and search once again. And we see this allegorical idea in the Mefarshim of Rashi. Rambam interpreted the Mashal as a whole symbol of love for God. Rashi interprets it according to the individual psukim. He further elaborates on this allegorical interpretation. If you look at source number 3, Rashi explains the words that we already explained on the literal level in source number 1. Rashi explains that when the woman says, "Ani yeshena, I am sleeping," that is referring to "Kishayiti shalva b'shaketet b'bayit harishon, no'ashti me'abud HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ki yeshena v'nirdemet." When it says the female protagonist was sleeping, this symbolically means how Bnei Israel were lazy in their Avodat Hashem in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, of the first Beit HaMikdash. When it says again in Pasuk Bet, "Veli bi er, my heart is awake," Rashi interprets that to mean, "Zeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shetzur levavi v'chalki er l'shamein v'le'ativ li." This is Hashem who is trying to get us to do tshuva. When she hears kol didi dofek, the voice of my beloved knocking, Rashi explains, "Mashresh shchinato al hanavi'im, umazir al yadeim hashchem v'shiluach." That is Hashem sending his shchina through the Nevi'im, telling, warning Bnei Israel to do tshuva. And lastly, when the man says, "Pitchili, open for me," begging the Raya to open the door, that, Rashi explains, is Hashem saying to Bnei Israel, "Al tirgumuli shestalek me'alecha," don't cause me to withdraw myself from you. So we don't only see the figurative interpretation of these psukim in Parshanut, in biblical exegesis, but we see it in medieval Jewish philosophy as well. Yehuda Halevi was a religious poet and Jewish philosopher in medieval times. He lived in around the 1100s in Muslim Spain. The Muslims at this time were very much oppressing the Jews and trying to pressure them to convert to Islam. Yehuda Halevi, therefore, wrote the Sefer Kuzari in an effort to explain to the Jews their faith and their history and to enable them to defend their faith against the Muslims, and also to enable the Muslims to see the legitimacy and the authenticity of the Jewish religion. So Yehuda Halevi, in the next excerpt, explains in the Sefer Kuzari a little bit about the history of the Jewish people, specifically in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, or Chorban Bayit Sheni. And he explains our psukim again in this allegorical style. "It is the sin which kept the divine promise with regard to the second temple. Divine providence was ready to restore everything as it had been at first, if they had all willingly consented to return. But only a part was ready to do so, while the majority and the aristocracy remained in Babel, preferring dependence and slavery and unwilling to leave their houses and their affairs." So had Bnei Israel in Galut Babel after Chorban Bayit Sheni been willing to return when Hashem gave them the opportunity to Eretz Israel, when Bnei Israel had the opportunity to return, Hashem would have welcomed them back. Hashem would have restored His Shechinah to them. But Bnei Israel were more acclimated. They were more comfortable in their galut existence, and therefore did not heed Hashem's call. Yehuda Levi goes on to interpret Shlomo HaMelech's words from Shir Shirim. An allusion to them might be found in the enigmatic words of Solomon. I sleep, but my heart awaketh. That's Ani Sheinah V'Libi Er from Pasuk Bet in Shir Shirim. That Yehuda HaLevi explains, the exile is the symbol for the sleep, and the continuance of prophecy among them by the wakefulness of the hearts. When the woman in Shir Shirim says, Kol Didi Dofek, it's the voice of my beloved that knocks, that Yehuda HaLevi interprets to mean God's call to return. When the Dod, the beloved, the man, calls out to the Raya and says, Rosh Roshinim Natal, my head is filled with dew, that, Yehuda HaLevi explains, alludes to the Shechina, which emerged from the shadow of the temple. When the woman gives her excuse, Pishadati et Kutunati, I've already taken off my coat, that refers to the people's slothfulness, their laziness, in consenting to return. When the man puts forth his hand through the keyhole, that may be interpreted, according to Yehuda HaLevi, as the urgent call of Ezra and Nehemiah and the Nevi'im until a portion of the people grudgingly responded to their invitation to return to Eretz Yisrael. In accordance with their mean mind, they did not receive full measure. Divine providence only gives man as much as he is prepared to receive. If his receptive capacity be small, he obtains little, and much if it be great. Were we prepared to meet the God of our forefathers with a pure mind, we should find the same salvation as our fathers did in Egypt. So had B'nai Israel, after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, been as passionate to follow God as they did when they left Mitzrayim, Hashem would have returned to them completely. But because of B'nai Israel's comfort and laziness in Galut, Hashem didn't return to them in full measure. This idea of B'nai Israel's rejection of God in history was not prevalent only in medieval times, but similar sentiments were expressed in our own contemporary times. Rav Soloveitchik, in 1956, gave an address on Yom HaAtzma'ut to the entire YU community, and he entitled this speech, Kol Dudi Dofek, from our Psukim and Shir Shirim. Using the allegorical interpretation, the Rav compares the distance between the male and the female protagonist in the Megillah to the Hester Panim, to God's hiddenness during the Shoah, during the Holocaust. And he interprets God's establishment, the miraculous establishment of Medina Israel, as God Kol Dodi Dofek, knocking on the door of B'nai Israel, just as the Dod knocked on the door of his beloved. If you look at source number 5, he explains, 8 years ago, in the midst of a night of terror, filled with the horrors of Majdanek, Treblinka, and Buchenwald, in a night of gas chambers and crematoria, in a night of absolute divine self-concealment, Hester Panim Muchlat, in a night ruled by the Satan of doubt and apostasy, which sought to sweep the maiden from her house into the Christian church, in a night of continuous searching, of questing for the beloved, in that very night the beloved appeared. God, who conceals himself in his dazzling hiddenness, suddenly manifested himself and began to knock at the tent of his despondent and disconsolate love, twisting convulsively on her bed, suffering the pains of hell. As a result of the knocks on the door of the maiden, wrapped in mourning, the state of Israel was born. Rav Soloveitchik continues with the allegorical interpretation to describe, to compare our response to Medina Israel, to the response of the Raya, of the woman, not heeding the call of her beloved. What was our reaction to the voice of the beloved that knocks, to God's bounteous kindness and wonders? Did we descend from our couches and immediately open the door? Or did we, like the Shulamit maiden, continue to rest and tarry, rather than descend from our beds? American Jewry could certainly have accelerated the process of colonization. The obligation to pay close attention to the voice of my beloved that knocks and to respond to him immediately with mighty deeds and undertakings devolves precisely upon us who are faithful to traditional Judaism. When the desolate wife, Sion, Yerushalayim, who had awaited us with such yearning and for so long, invited us, her sons to come and redeem her from her desolate condition. And when the beloved, Hashem, who had watched over the desolation for almost 1900 years, and who had decreed that not a tree would flourish there, that no springs would fructify its ground, knocked on the door of his love, the maiden, we religious Jews, did not rush to descend from her couch and let in the beloved. Can we not hear in our own concern for the peace and security of the land of Israel today, and he said this in 1956, the knocking of the beloved, pleading with his love that she let him enter? He has already been knocking for more than 8 years and still has not received a proper response. Nevertheless, he continues to knock. We have been fortunate. The beloved in the Megillah did not show any special regard to his own cherished darling, but he, Hashem, establishing Medina Israel for us, continues to favor us. On that fateful night, the maiden's beloved knocked on the door of her tent for only a brief moment and then disappeared, while he treats us with extreme patience. It is 8 years now that he has been knocking. Would that we not miss the moment. Many have argued that the sentiments that the Rav expressed in 1956 are, to some extent, still true today. And as we celebrate Yom Yerushalayim on Wednesday this week, perhaps we should reflect back on the lessons that we learned from our history, from Rashi, from Yehuda Halevi, how B'nai Israel did not appreciate their spiritual center when they had it, and therefore we need to work to restore and appreciate that spiritual center in our days. Elsewhere, in his Tshuva Drashot, Rav Soloveitchik describes the human challenge of appreciating what we have when we have it, just like the inability or the challenge of the Raya to appreciate what she had when she had the opportunity to reunite with her love. If you look at the next source taken from Ala Tshuva, Rav Soloveitchik explains, there seems to be a tragic flaw inherent in the nature of man, from which no one can escape. The people and things that we love and cherish most are not fully appreciated as long as they are alive and present with us. We realize what they meant to us only after they are gone and their image has become faded and unreal. They seem to twinkle from afar as the stars in the night. We admire them but cannot touch them. How many near and dear ones did we have whom we did not succeed in appreciating fully as long as they were with us? So Rav Soloveitchik is explaining that often we take much of what we have for granted, and often when we no longer have that opportunity, do we fully appreciate what we failed to do earlier. He explains that when someone sins, the same thing happens. Often we take our relationship with Hashem for granted, and it's only after we sin and thereby distance ourselves from Him that we truly appreciate that relationship that we had once enjoyed. However, he explains that unlike when somebody passes on and we can no longer restore that relationship to appreciate them fully, with Hashem, even after we distance ourselves from Him, through tshuva, we are able to restore that relationship and enjoy it and appreciate it in a more passionate, in a stronger manner. If you look at the rest of that excerpt, he explains, the penitent, the chozer b'tshuva, undergoes a similar experience. When a Jew sins, he banishes God from his presence. At first, man may not sense what has happened. He may not realize what has actually occurred. This happens to anyone who has lost someone dear to him. The same thing applies in the spiritual realm when God has departed from man in the wake of his sins. While our longings are a fantasy, for one who has died will never return, longing for God is realistic, and man is drawn to him and rushes towards him with all of his strength. Just as the Raya in the Megillah has a renewed passion, and that is what motivated her to initiate another intense search for her beloved, so too on the allegorical level, we need to be motivated with that same passion, with a renewed passion, to strengthen our relationship with God. So Shir HaShirim is read on Pesach, because like Shir HaShirim, Pesach is about passion, hope, and promise. And we commemorate on Pesach not just that God liberated us from our avdut, from our slavery in Egypt, but we recognize the vision of freedom that He granted us while we were still slaves in Mitzrayim. The mitzvot of Pesach, the mitzvot of the Korban Pesach, of Matzah, were both commanded early on in Sefer Shemot, while Bnei Israel were still avadim, while Bnei Israel were still enslaved. The vision of the miracle of Yitziat Mitzrayim preceded the actual miracle, and the mitzvot that commemorate the hasty exodus from Egypt existed as a promise to Bnei Israel before they existed as a commemoration. For the same reason, the Megillah that we read on Pesach is not about a stable, settled love, but about a vision of a love that may not ever be fully achieved. Pesach is an opportunity for us to recommit to that vision that inspired us to so passionately follow Moshe out of our avdut in Mitzrayim. But as we see from Bnei Israel's experience in the Midbar after Yitziat Mitzrayim, that passion and enthusiasm with which they left Mitzrayim was somewhat short-lived and lacked commitment. When things became tough for Bnei Israel in the Midbar, Bnei Israel on several occasions did not display any loyalty to God, but rather rejected him, preferring to return to their enslaved existence back in Mitzrayim. Megillat Rut, read on Shavuot, can be viewed as the complement and counterpart to Shir HaShirim, in that it presents an ideal of love that is rooted in responsibility and in an undying faithfulness, in contrast to Shir HaShirim's depiction of a passionate but inconsistent love. Megillat Rut, like Shir HaShirim, is also a love story, but of a very different nature. Here, all of the instances of love, the love of Rut for her mother-in-law Naomi, the love of Rut for her late husband Mahlon, the love of Rut and Boaz for each other, are all examples of love based on commitment, loyalty, and devotion. In fact, the whole love story of Rut begins when Rut's husband dies, precisely where the reader would expect it to end. The theme of the value of loyalty and commitment is throughout the Megillah. The Midrash even explains that the reason for the death of Elimelech, Naomi's husband, described in the first three psukim of the Megillah, is because he left Eretz Yisrael in the time of the Ra'av, in the time of the famine, failing to demonstrate loyalty to Hashem, his people, and the land. If you look in Rut Rabbah, the next source, in Parsha Aleph, the Midrash asks the question, Lama ne'enash Elimelech? Why was Elimelech punished? If you skip down to the third to last line, four words from the end of that line, the Midrash explains, Kach Elimelech haya migdolei hamdina umfarnasei ador. V'kishabou shnei ra'avon amar, Achshav kol Yisrael misuvivim pitchi, ze b'kupato v'ze b'kupato. Amar v'barach lo mipnehem. Elimelech, the Midrash describes, was one of the leaders of his generation. When the Rav came, he knew that the masses would be looking to him. And failing to take responsibility, failing to step up, failing to show his loyalty, he instead got up and he fled. The Midrash explains, therefore, he was punished. In contrast to the lack of commitment of Elimelech, Boaz and Rut, two of the main characters throughout the Megillah, display the utmost loyalty and commitment. After Naomi's two sons died, Rut, her Moabite daughter-in-law, refused to go back to her homeland and instead insisted on remaining with her mother-in-law, even if that limited her opportunity to remarry. If you look in the first perek of Megillat Rut, Sukim Chet Tet Yud Yud Aleph, we see Naomi, Rut's mother-in-law, constantly trying to dissuade both daughters-in-law, Rut and Orpah, from coming with her back to Eretz Yisrael. And she says in Pasuk Chet, V'tomer Naomi l'shtei chaloteha, Lechna, shovna isha leveitima, ya'as Hashem imachem chesed, ka'asher askitim im hamitim ve'imadi. She tells Naomi and Orpah, both of her daughter-in-laws, of her two dead sons, go back to your mother's house. Let Hashem do chesed with you, just as you have done with me and with my dead sons. Yitein Hashem lachem metzene menucha, isha b'tisha, v'tishak lahem tasenu kolam v'tivkena. She says, go find menucha, go find rest in your mother's houses. But both daughters-in-law initially refused. Pasuk yud, v'tomer na, la ki itach nashuv la'amaich. They say, no, we want to return with you. They show an allegiance, a loyalty. They want to remain with her and help take care of her in her grief. And we see that she doesn't stop. She continues to persuade them. Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'tomer na'ami, shov na benotai, lamat alech na'imi, ha'od libanim b'ma'ai v'ayu lachem la'ashim? She says, no, don't be silly. Go back to your homeland. Go back to your mother's house. I don't have any more children for you to marry. I don't have any more sons for you to perform yibum with so that you can have children to allow the names of your dead husbands to live on. But we see she was successful in dissuading Orpah to remain with her. But Ruth remains firm. Pasuk Yudalid, v'tisan sena kolam tivkena ov tishak harpa. So Orpah does go back, but Rut davkaba. Rut stays with her. Rut clings with her. And we see she continues in one last effort in Pasuk Tedvav to convince Rut to follow her other sister-in-law. Go back, follow Orpah, go back to your mother's house. But look at Rut's allegiance. Look at her level of commitment in Tet Zayin and Yud Zayin. V'tomer Rut, al tifki'i v'la azvech l'shuv me'acharayach, ki el asher telchi elech, uv'asher talini alin, amech ami, v'lohayach elohai, ka'asher tamuti amut, v'sham akaver, ko yaseh Hashem li v'cho yosif, ki hamavet yifrid b'nei u'b'nech. Rut shows this undying faithfulness to her mother-in-law by saying, don't try to urge me to go back anymore. Don't try to urge me to return from coming with you. Where you walk, I want to walk. Where you lie, I want to lie. Your nation is my nation. Your God is my God. When you die, I want to die and I want to be buried there. Only death will separate me from you. So we see this paradigmatic allegiance that Ruth shows, not only for her mother-in-law Naomi, but for Judaism as well. And Chazal even model the whole halachic process of geirus, the whole halachic process of conversion after the paradigm of roots. Chazal explains that the Beit Din needs to try to dissuade on many occasions the potential convert to assess their allegiance. And only once they show the loyalty that roots demonstrated are they welcomed into the Jewish faith. Not only does Naomi recognize roots' commitment, but Boaz does as well. If you look in Perek Gimel, Boaz says to Ruth, "Vayoma brucha at laHashem, biti hitav tachastech acharon min harishon levilti lechet acharei habochurim imdal v'im asher." Ruth was young. Ruth could have married a number of young bachurim, but Ruth was committed to her family and wanted to perform yibum in an extent so that the name of her dead husband would be able to live on through children. Boaz recognizes this loyalty and blesses Ruth by saying, your current chesed, the chesed of wanting to marry Boaz, a much older man, is even greater than the first chesed that she has shown towards Naomi. And he continues by saying, not only do I recognize this, but in Pasuk Yud Aleph, v'ata biti al tira kol asher tomru asa lach, everybody recognizes, Ruth, that you are an Eshet Chayel. Boaz, just as Ruth, demonstrates commitment. Boaz's commitment is not only to Ruth, but it's to the halachic process as well. Even though Boaz very much wanted to marry Ruth, he controlled his passion in order to demonstrate his commitment in an appropriate manner. By giving the first opportunity to perform Yibum to the closer relative. There was one individual who is not named in the Megillah that was a closer relative to Ruth's late husband that had the first opportunity halachically to perform Yibum. And only if he refused would Boaz be able to fulfill his passion. In the next two psukim, Yud Bet and Yud Gimel, Boaz explains this to Ruth. Va'ata ki amnam ki goel anochi, v'gam yesh goel krov mimeni. I am an appropriate goel. I am from Machlon's family, but there is a relative that is even closer than me. So Boaz instructs Ruth in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Lini halayla vahiya boker imi galech tov yigal, v'im lo yechpot legalech ugaltich, anochi chershem shichvi ad haboker. So he says, I first have to give the opportunity to the closest relative. If he refuses, then I will be able to marry you. It's only after, in the next parak, the Goel refuses, is Boaz able to consummate his love. In Perek Dalid, Pasuk Yud, Boaz professes in front of the Edim, in front of the Zakenim, that he will marry Ruth and thereby allow the name of her late husband to live on. V'gamet Ruth Hamoviah, Eshet Machlon, Kaniti Lilisha, Lehekim Shem Hamet al Nachalato, V'lo Yekret Shem Hamet K'mi'im Achav, U'mishar Makomo Edim Atam Hayom. He says, you Zakenim are Edim of this Kinyan that I'm doing today. I'm going to marry Ruth in order to allow the name of her dead husband, Lo Yekret, to not be cut off, but rather to perpetuate. So the value of using commitment to channel his passion, as we've just seen by Boaz in the Megillah, is described in a halachic context by Rav Soloveitchik in his essay, Catharsis. Rav Soloveitchik there explains the idea of gvura. In Greek literature, heroism, gvura, is often connoted by boldness, by passion, by aggressiveness. The Rav, however, explains in this essay that true heroism, true gvura, from a halachic perspective, demands commitment, which often can be expressed through passion, but at times must also manifest itself through restraint. In source number 9, he explains, what is heroism? What is gvura in the halacha? What does the halacha recommend to us that we may attain heroic stature? The answer is, one must perform the dialectical movements. The halachic catharsis expresses itself in paradoxical movement, in two opposite directions, in surging forward boldly and passionately, and in retreating humbly. Man's heroic experience is a polar, antithetic one. Man drives forward only to retreat and to reverse, subsequently, the direction of his movement. We are required to engage in this dialectical movement of passion, of boldness, and of humility, of restraint, in every aspect in our life, in our physical life, in our emotional life, in our moral life, in our intellectual life. Rav Soloveitchik explains it here and gives us an example. Halacha teaches that at every level of our total existential experience, the aesthetic hedonic, the emotional, the intellectual, the moral religious, one must engage in the dialectical movement by alternately advancing and retreating. In the physical level, he gives us an illustration. He gives us the example of a chupat nida. Look how he describes the passion and the true heroism that's demonstrated. Bride and bridegroom are young, physically strong, and passionately in love with each other. Both have patiently waited for this rendezvous to take place. Just one more step and their love would have been fulfilled, a vision realized. Suddenly, the bride and groom make a movement of recoil. So he's explaining the idea of a chupat nida. The bride and groom, after waiting so long to finally be able to halachically consummate their marriage, all of a sudden they see dam nida and they have to retreat. So that he makes a movement of recoil. He, gallantly, like a chivalrous knight, exhibits paradoxical heroism. He takes his own defeat. There's no glamour attached to his withdrawal. The latter is not a spectacular gesture, since there are no witnesses to admire and to laud him. The heroic act did not take place in the presence of jubilating crowds. No bards will sing of these two modest, humble young people. It happened in the sheltered privacy of their home, in the stillness of the night. The young man, like Jacob of old, makes an about-face. He retreats at the moment when fulfillment seems assured. Just like the bridegroom in catharsis, Boaz, too, didn't act on pure passion. Rather, he demonstrated both commitment and responsibility by channeling his passion in an appropriate manner. Through all of these examples that we see in Megillat Rut, the Megillah presents itself as a complement to Shir Shirim, but portraying an ideal love that is based upon responsibility and faithfulness, in contrast to Shir Shirim's depiction of a passionate and hopeful love that's not always consistent. The relationship of Pesach to Shavuot is parallel to the relationships of the Megillot to each other. Where Pesach celebrates the promise of liberation and establishment of God's relationship with his passionate chosen nation, Shavuot celebrates Matan Torah and the giving of the mitzvot that reflects the commitment that grounds that passionate relationship. Pesach and Shavuot respectively represent passion and responsibility in the service of God. The Torah links Pesach and Shavuot by commanding us to count the days between them. There's no date in the Torah given for Chag Shavuot. It's just described as 7 weeks after Pesach. So Pesach and Shavuot need each other. Each would be incomplete without the other. In the same way, our lives are only complete when we fuse the commitment and dedication on the one hand with a passionate and uncompromising vision of our ideals and goals on the other. Rambam, in his Mor Nebuchim, in his Guide of the Perplexed, describes the necessity of both of these components in his discussion of human perfection. To achieve this ideal, Rambam explains, one needs both ahava, love, and yira, fear of God. If you look in the last source, the Mor Nebuchim, Book 3, Chapter 52, he explains, what I have here pointed out to you is the object of all our religious acts. For by carrying out all of the details of the prescribed practices, meaning the halacha, and repeating them continually, consistently, some few pious men may attain human perfection. They will be filled with respect and reverence towards God, and bearing in mind who is with them, they will perform their duty. God declares in plain words that it is the object of all religious acts to produce in man fear of God and obedience to his word, the state of mind which we have demonstrated in the chapter for those who desire to know the truth as being our duty to seek. But the truth which the law teaches us, the knowledge of God's existence and unity, create in us a love of God, as we have shown repeatedly. You know how frequently the law exhorts us to love God. V'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha u'v'chol nafshecha v'chol mo'odecha. You should love God with all of your heart, with all of your soul. The same pasuk that Rambam quoted in source number 2 in the Shir HaShirim metaphor, the passionate love, even more passionate than the human love, should be the love for God. The two objects, love and fear of God, are acquired by two different means. The love is the result of the truths taught in the law, including the true knowledge of God and the existence of God, the passion that we feel with the recognition of God. While the fear of God is produced by the practices, the halachic commitment prescribed in the law. So Rambam interprets yira, fear of God, as the commitment to observing God's mitzvot. And he interprets ava, as we've seen before and again here, as the passion one feels in recognizing the awe of the deity, even greater than the human love. One needs the fusion of both the ava and the yira in his relationship with Hashem. Since passion, without commitment, lacks consistency, as we saw in Shir HaShirim, and commitment without passion lacks meaning. The passion between the Dod and the Raya in Shir HaShirim, reflecting the passionate relationship between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael, is crucial. It's integral. But the problem was that the passion was sometimes inconsistent. And as we saw throughout history, and even perhaps in our own day, it could lead to missed opportunities. We need to maintain the passion through the commitment. It was the committed relationship between Boaz and Ruth that produced the Davidic dynasty, which will ultimately lead to Mashiach and to the fulfillment of our spiritual potential. As we celebrate Yom Shalayim this Wednesday, and as Shavuot, Zman Matan Torotenu, rapidly approaches, let us internalize the messages of both Shir Shirim and Megillat Ruth, in an effort to recognize and appreciate our personal and national opportunities with renewed passion and commitment. Thank you very much for coming.